are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
The year is 3129. Mankind is adrift in the stars. Giant spaceships hurtle the last of humanity towards their destiny, whatever it may be. Only one thing can keep them going and power these great ships, will feed the minds and spirits of these people. And that is the last brewing company to survive in the future, Circle Brewing. So great was their product that they indeed became the legendary Earth Brewers. But, you know, it's right now, 2018, or maybe 2019, depending on when you're listening to this. And you can get Circle Brewing right by going into Austin, by stopping into their brewery on Breaker Lane. Or you can get it in convenience stores where there's all sorts of good stuff. Martin, you're from the future. What do you think?
Well, I tell you, Austin is a city with no shortage of breweries, but this is some of the best I've ever had.
Well, there you go. You can't ask somebody who's going to give you a truer thing about beer than Mr. Martin Thomas, because he's an alcoholic.
OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber-supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going, and get some terrific bonus content as well.
I'm first to admit, I get all weird about King Arthur stuff. I inherited it from my dad. I remember one of the first books he gave me was The Once and Future King by T.E. White, which is the one the Disney cartoon is largely, The Sword and the Stone is largely an adaptation of. But certainly, even though it's far from the earliest version, not even close to the earliest version of King Arthur, it's, I would say, definitively the most popular one.
And I don't know why you call your dick the Pendragon.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah. God, I don't know what to say after that. That's pretty. Thanks, ladies and gentlemen.
That's pretty good. But
this new
legend,
this new one, The Kid Who Would Be King, I'm like, okay, well, it's not uncommon, certainly. I mean, it's a Disney one as well, to have, like, yes, let's do a kiddie version of King Arthur. We've certainly seen a lot of those over the years, although more recently it's been really shoddy adult adaptations.
Really bad ones.
But public domain.
Anime as fuck.
I'm looking at the trailer of this, and I was like, oh, it's, you know, one of these kiddie, like, King Arthur things. And it's, like, written and directed by Joe Cornish. And I'm like, wait, what?
You have my attention.
You have my attention, sir. And that's
Go on.
You guys don't know, that's the guy who wrote and directed The Wonderful Attack the Block. And literally has not directed another movie
since then. Astounding to me.
Yeah. He just, I don't know, didn't know what he wanted to do? But
I guess so.
But I gotta tell you, I'm really grateful that he, sorry, there's people coming in who are talking. we're trying to record this right before the gathering. No, it's fine. But, like, despite that fact, I'm glad he took his time, because this film, which I suspect is only going to perform but so well in the United States, because this film is so British it shits the Queen.
I've never heard that, I'm not going to lie.
I love that expression. It's definitely not pointed at American audiences. This is more pointed at, like, hey, you know how Britain's all fucked up right now? Well, maybe we should start looking into, like, nobility and honor and loyalty and things like that as being actual important qualities once again. And I'm like, and doing it without beating you over the head with a stick about it.
Well, the movie does basically point out, like, call out Theresa May. It's like, yeah, we have no leaders.
Yeah, right. But even to the point, like I said, they're not specific. There's not even any, like, it's just kind of more about knighthood, right. And I like that. But I'm Chris.
And I'm Mike.
I'm Ben.
And yeah, this is, I found The King Who Would Be King to be a very pleasant, very 80s Amblin kids adventure movie type of a surprise.
100%. The entire time I was sitting there, I'm like, this is definitely a movie I would have watched growing up if I was, you know, like, if this was a movie I watched as a kid, I would have adored this film. Like, right away.
Oh, yeah. No, this is a film that you're like, you just know that if you had watched it when you were young, you'd have t-shirts that you're getting from online stores now.
This would be your favorite movie of all time. Like, you would be like, if it was us, you know, this movie came out 15 years ago for me and Mike, we'd be here saying at the gathering, you guys never saw The Kid Who Would Be King? That's the best movie that ever came out.
We would be saying that. We would also be talking about the stories of when we were, like, acting it, I guess, at some point.
Yeah, I was in the theatrical adaptation.
It was, like, just insane shit. Like, just, like, role-playing fun kind of thing. Like, it seems like something I would have, like, tried doing as a kid.
You would have played, like, a Nintendo game adaptation of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I will say, throughout this movie, though, I sat there trying to look for him, like, where's the part that I'm going to feel like you're just pandering to kids, it's not good enough? And I'm like, yeah, this is definitely a movie aimed at a younger audience, but I never felt like it did anything that was super pandering to kids. I never felt like it cheated itself on it. It's definitely a younger movie, you know, than Attack the Block, but it wears that on its sleeve as like, yeah, we know who we're targeting, but we're going to make it entertaining for everyone.
It has a refreshing innocence to the whole thing. Yeah. That like, yeah, if you want to go into this film super cynical and go, how could that possibly? They're just kids. How would that even work? Then you're here for the wrong movie, dude.
Oh, like, definitely.
Like, I like feel like these are the same people who came out of the Goonies going, those kids couldn't possibly have survived that experience. Well, you saw the wrong movie, sir.
In this film, it
grew up to be Thanos, damn it.
This movie understands its lore so well and, like, lives in it. Like, I never felt like it broke, you know, what they said magic could do or said, oh, this is how magic works, and then did something completely different. It's like, no, you basically have to randomly gesture with your hands until magic happens every
like
time.
I like you. You've got to do, like, some male cheerleader stuff with your hands to do it.
But,
so this movie, I don't know if y'all realize, the star of this, who plays the Alex, who is going to be the kid who will be king, the reincarnation of King Arthur, if you will, Louis Serkis, that's Andy Serkis's son.
I think he's youngest
incarnation of Andy Serkis, then.
I don't know about that.
With a better acting career in live action.
But
he's not in Avengers yet.
He's an honorable young kid who's like regularly defends his young friend Betters, played by Dean Chamu, who I believe is Pakistani.
I believe so, which is actually a very big demographic in England.
Oh,
so
yes.
It was great that they were representing that well.
But he's definitely Betters is the biggest nerd, and then Alex is the nerd who kind of has that sense of honor and tries to defend him from the two bullies who are, like, you know, obviously a grade older or so. Tom Taylor as Lance and Rhianna Doris as Kay, who regularly just kind of screwing with him. But lo and behold, one day, Alex is running from the bullies, falls into a construction site, finds himself a sword in a stone, pulls it out, and then a bunch of shit starts happening.
It's better than finding Jumanji.
Because Jumanji tries to kill you. Excalibur does exactly the opposite.
It might turn you into The Rock, though. So, I mean, come on.
That's true. Sure, well, yeah, The Rock is in both movies. Just in this case, he's got a sword in him. So,
God damn it. Those who pull the sword out of Rock's ass becomes king.
God, please no. For Jumanji,
you smell the sword is cooking.
And then the next day, Angus Imrie and occasionally Patrick Stewart show up as Merlin, who pretends to be very poorly.
No, his name is Merton.
Merton. He's like trying, like, wasn't that a very clever name to assume?
Merton?
Yeah. But trying to pretend very poorly that he's a student at the school. But, you know, kind of is immediately, like, just staring at Alex the whole time. Like,
it was like a really great, just ongoing set of scenes where it's just like the perfect mirroring it, where every scene is just staring him down until he freaks out about an eclipse.
Well, so that's the whole thing, is there's an eclipse coming up. Merlin thought it was going to be 4 years, and he screwed his time up by saying, oh, no, it's only 4 days. So we got to rush this thing along. Right. And part of the deal is whenever it becomes night, all like during this the rise period of Morgana Le Fay, who is imprisoned under the earth, played by Rebecca Ferguson.
Which is cool seeing her in a different role than Mission Impossible, because all I can think of her for now.
Yeah. Very true. But she sends these undead flaming night warriors up from the earth. So it's basically King Arthur versus the Army of Darkness.
Yeah. This was the last part. I was like, I feel like Ash should show up at some point and lead these kids.
Right? Well, except in this case, it's this kid who's King
Isn't
Arthur.
Isn't King Arthur in the Army of Darkness?
I don't think so.
I could have sworn one of them.
I feel like there's like references to King Arthur.
I think the comic book versions that they made of it did, but yeah, not in the main
I
movie.
I feel like the guy who's kind of the leader guy
is Arthur,
like, they like do a little nod towards that, but it's not like overt. You know,
fair enough.
It's not like he's got a bunch of Galahads and Belvedere.
But I do love that this movie,
Mr. Belvedere, is running around.
I do like this movie likes to point out. And he's like, yeah, I'm a kid. They're not just gonna like make me king because you gave me a sword.
No. He figures out that it really is the big key thing in this is to succeed in their mission. He has to obey the knight's codes of honor, which is basically those things we start off talking about: honor, nobility, and the thing is at night. All adults, just anyone who has not been knighted by him officially disappears from the world during the period that Morgan Le Fay gets a little period where she can send up a certain growing every night amount of her undead warriors to try and chase down, Alex and get the sword for some reason. I guess that she's decided that's her power core there. But anyway,
she wants the sword because it says you're the rightful heir of the country. Right. And she assumes she's the rightful heir because she's the only one who has any of that blood left.
Yeah, she's the last Pendragon. Yeah.
Yes. Which turns out to be a dragon.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I think what they do with the lore of Arthur is actually really great here. It starts off with a really cool animated segment where, like, it's a great retelling of the story with some really cool kind of semi-3D cel-shaded art.
Yeah.
Then it moves into, like, yeah, here's the present day, and then slowly but surely bits of the Arthurian lore really start getting revealed, and it kind of just plays with it nicely and plays with, you know, Stonehenge gets given some use that's like, yeah, it's a really great joke if you know anything about old British lore. That's hilarious. And then when they actually get to the island, that's, you know, supposedly where Arthur and Uther are from, it's like, oh, and here's how Arthur is used in England today as the biggest tourist trap on the goddamn planet.
But seeing that, they go to the island of Tintagel, I think this is. Which is, like, historically one of the places they go, this is where Camelot was. Yeah. I mean, no, you know.
It's
I mean,
so Sicilian.
Whatever. But, like, they've adapted it as sort of their, this is how we get people to come to this cold, rocky island with having King Arthur shit everywhere. And I immediately went, how did I not know about this?
Yeah.
Hey, honey, we're taking a trip to England.
That's the thing we said at the end, like, we're all outside, like, we're making jokes about them. We're like, so is that a real place? Like, do they have those tourist attractions? Do they make some of those?
I want to go to Camelot.
Camelot looks so fun.
Well, I was like, I want to, yeah, because there's a, they have to go at one point to earn some money and yada yada. You'll see when you watch the movie, but, like, they have to go to an arcade called Camelots. And I was like, is there a strip club near there? I want to see what that's called.
And I would still go to that one.
I think ultimately, despite the fact this doesn't have a huge budget, clearly, it's not a movie that's trying to appeal to this always faster, newer, bigger, better type audiences these days. This is really going after an old school feel, and I think it achieves it because of the strength of the relationship between these young kids, a really strong, like, dialogue scripting for them, and it ultimately being about, more than anything, the heart at the center of this film, just these feelings of, like, these kids not knowing where they fit in, and a general feeling communicated to a bigger audience in England of, like, everyone not feeling like they're fitting in, and a sense of doom, oncoming doom and gloom, and them sort of saying, well, maybe the answer is we should just start trying to be better people to each other.
Nah.
But finding a way to do that through the actual, where it's not, like, outside of it, it's like they're all couching it within that mythology of we can't win without honoring this knight's code, I think is really kind of special.
What I thought was the most special thing, you know, I was talking about the dialogue and them becoming better people, is that all of them have a specific character arc about themselves as it progresses, about going from, like, with the bullies, going from, you know, just being a giant fucking prick to to being, like, the most noble guy you know, and as well as, you know, Alex's journey to get more confidence in this incredible journey, the same with even his friend Betters. And the fact that, I love the fact that the way the journey starts for him is that he's just, I'm 12, no. Like, him immediately saying, this is stupid, I'm not fucking doing this. But by the time it's done, you're just like, I believe that he was able to do that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, that's also to a credit to the movie. Like, when it comes to, like, the action scenes, like, they don't just go, okay, these kids have swords and they know how to fight. There's literally a training scene where it's showing, like, oh, they really don't know what they're doing. And all of a sudden, these training trees that Merlin conjures are like, oh, yeah, here, this is how you do this technique. Let's repeat it three more times. Like, oh, these kids aren't just, like, Mary Sueing their way into doing it. They actually trained a little bit and kind of learned it as opposed to on the fly.
I mean, it's still, like, that's like an hour, dude.
True, but it's better than most movies.
But once again, most movies wouldn't even, it's magic, okay? They know how to fight, right? And this one is like, no, they actually had to get trained a little bit to get some of the basic ideas. And fortunately, this is like the keep on the borderlands of Arthurian threats. Yeah. This is like, these are all first level undead warriors they're fighting. So.
Yeah, I love how, like, the first one that dies, he's like, oh yeah, they're made of fucking bone.
they come apart real easy, real scary looking, fragile.
And they explode.
And I will say, even in the few points where this movie loses me, where it's just like, that wasn't great, was like, there's a scene where they're driving and, like, they ask, like, how'd you learn to do that? Mario Kart. Like, you don't learn manual shifting in Mario
See,
Kart.
That's
I'm
the
sorry.
Part of our brains that are telling.
No, I agree.
That.
But what I'm saying is, like, that's the one thing that stood out to me as annoying. And then, like, they even end that scene with a great comedic way that scene would end at the end of it. It's like, oh yeah, that's the exact logic, that the logic of the movie continues to work because somebody actually paid attention to their script and said this scene needs to meet what we said was going to happen.
That's true. All right, well, let's get our final thoughts. Keep going, Ben.
Yeah, overall, it's like, as I said, I think I really even kept trying to look for a seam in this movie, something I didn't like. The CGI may not be, like, the most amazing every scene, but it's fine. There's never a part where I'm like, this really takes me out of the movie. Like, even the last fight is a really big CGI fight. But it still works. The kids, really strong performances, which is kind of what we expected from Cornish, because that's exactly what Attack of the Block was.
Great working with kids, yeah.
And he finds great cast, and he gets it to work. Even when you get the big group of kids towards the end, like, you don't feel like any of them were, like, you know, taking away from it. It's like, yeah, they kind of fit that mode that they're going for. And I just had fun. I mean, I think about, like, for my nephews, too. It's like, maybe he's too young for how dark this movie gets, which I love how dark it gets. But it's perfect for, like, a five-year-old and up, being like, yeah, this will get you into Arthurian lore. It'll get you to have a fun time. And even the parents will have a good time watching it, I think.
Yeah.
So overall, I'm going to give it 8.5 out of 10. Large bundles of rope the school has.
Spider Mike?
I'm gonna put it to the British. They keep making me happy randomly in the middle of January.
You should stop going to that brothel.
Because last year, I watched Paddington 2 with Chris.
Oh, yeah.
And that movie made me all fucking warm and fuzzy. This one isn't as warm and fuzzy, but it's still pretty good about that sort of thing. Because it's got a good message. It's got a good heart to everything. Every character starts off in one way and ends up in another way. That just makes sense of how they got there. Like, never once did I look at a character and be like, that doesn't make any sense. They shouldn't have been able to get that kind of confidence from this. It's like, no, everybody gradually became who they were. And even the lessons at the end about, you know, sticking together was really interesting. Even the big CGI fight, they got really clever with how they were taking on some of the stuff that happens as it progresses. And also kind of clever about using the fact that a lot of our foods have weird shit in them, which was a lot of fun. It was something, a joke that I actually used to make about vanilla extract.
Yeah, I actually knew that about the beaver urine to make.
Yeah, I knew all of those.
The only one I knew out of everything.
But it was stuff I look up when I'm bored.
I was laughing so fucking hard from that. But overall, like, there's some stuff here and there that probably won't be as interesting to other people. Like, there was a kid that was in front of that was like, there wasn't enough action. And I was like, you're five. Why are you thinking that?
Yeah. I have a feeling to some degree that this, at least in America, this film is not going to appeal to as much as the really little kids as it will to people our age.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
I really, really like this film. And personally, I would have to give it 8.9 out of 10. Cherry sodas.
Wow, can't say nine.
That's
huh?
Wonderfully arbitrary. Yeah, thank you.
I think it's funnier because it makes me think that that's what Merlin would say.
Merton.
Yeah.
I think we're all on the same page here. This is charming. It's lightly funny. It's clever. It definitely is a film that makes the argument. You don't need to throw shit tons of CG and action in a movie to make a good kids movie. And I think this is really kind of a great kids movie. In some ways, it's a shame this came out when it did now, because it's never going to get the classic status it would have been accorded if it had actually, this movie had been made in the 80s. But sure. Cornish is famously a lover of the films of the 80s. And this really shows that he got it. It's not anybody trying to take stuff from those films. It's him going, this just feels like a totally separate film that would have been made then. And yeah, I was pleased as punch. I actually got the chills a couple times watching this movie. Partially because, once again, super King Arthur dork here. Just right. Saying. But there's stuff that more the stuff that really got to me here and even made me tear up a little is about the nobility of the whole thing. The way they really discuss human nobility and why that's important and why we're lacking that now. And doing it in a way that kids would understand. Filtering that through the whole knights thing, I'm just like, yes, yes, we all need to be knights of the round table. God damn it. Where's my sword? I'm ready. I'll fight the green knight. I don't give a fuck.
Oh, most unrealistic part is when they were like, we'll give you a sword and the armor. None of the other kids raised their hands.
Yeah.
I would have done it now.
Yeah, I was like, I'll just take it for the sword and armor. That's awesome. But yeah, this is really, really good stuff. And I give it 9 out of 10, special $10 lap dance specials at Camel Sluts.
Now, kid of the King Arthur's court, this is not, though.
No, it is not.
No.